doers, mowing season is here. With Spring Black Friday Savings at the Home Depot. Right now, you can get gas-like power with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower for just $329. With a runtime of nearly an hour, it's the perfect mower to tackle your half-acre lawn without a trip to the gas station. Just push and mow. Your grass won't wait, so buy it online and pick it up in-store to get out there sooner. Get gas-like power this spring with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower, just $329, during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Welcome to A Good Football Show. I am Patrick Daugherty, joined as always today by Mr. Denny Carter. Today we'll be talking the most memorable moments of Super Bowl 56. We're really just kind of like surveying the fallout of Super Bowl 56. Some look aheads for both the Rams and the Bengals. Namely, is every person involved in the Rams organization actually going to retire?
Yes.
We'll then do a quick check-in on Carson Wentz. It seems like he will be maybe playing for another team in 2022. After that, Denny Carter's going to grill me on my seasons and review article.
Yes.
Now live on NBCSportsEdge.com. But first, Denny, the viewers may have noticed, the listeners may have noticed. I don't know how the listeners would notice. I'm back in St. Louis. You're back in Maryland. We're back in civilian life.
Yes.
Frankly, just becoming stars in Hollywood, Los Angeles last week. And I just wonder how you're adjusting.
Well, just to give you an anecdote. I had to go to the grocery store the other day, and I sat in the back of the minivan waiting for my driver to get in and drive me to the grocery store for about 15 minutes before I realized, oh, wait, I'm not in LA anymore. So it's a hard transition, I'd say.
Yeah, so for the people who didn't think you were in LA, not only were you in LA, you did literally have a driver that took you to the hotel every day.
We got the celebrity treatment. I found myself, you know, doing news blurbs, screaming for more coffee, for some 18-year-old intern to come bring me coffee. No one brought me coffee. It was really disappointing.
No, our driver had a VIP thing in his car. This is actually not a joke.
No, it's not a joke.
Denny and I were VIPs, like the ATF dogs, like sniffed our car to make sure we weren't bringing anything illicit. And yeah, I mean, we got used to the high life.
Here's something they said. Every time we pulled into the convention center, the many security people would ask our driver, who do you have? And they would say, I have the talent. Which sure. I appreciate it. I said, yeah, well, I guess you do. You really do.
Talent. I do question how much talent I actually am. Whereas I saw a number of people most people are listening to this, so they can't see this. You were wearing a white NBC Sports Edge polo, one of which I was not given. That's given, right. A really nice gray one. But I really like this white one. And I saw you and Drew Dinsick just walking around flaunting your white polos, and I'm kind of wondering why I didn't get one.
It's I think it's a huge disrespect to you, honestly. We have to look into it.
Yes, the lawyers, all the lawyers, even your lawyers are looking into it on my behalf.
I feel bad.
Everyone's just upset about it.
Fantastic golf shirt. I haven't used it to golf yet, but man, this is nice. This is a very nice shirt.
Well, the lawyers don't want to be hearing that. You can't be soiling your on-air swag playing golf.
I don't sweat during golf, but it moves nicely. Man, I could wear this thing all day. I could sleep in this thing.
But yeah, we're back from out west where, we were frankly stars. And now we don't have a crew or anything. Well, that's not true. We actually do still have a crew. Sorry, yeah, not to.
But, going from a studio type setting with big cameras and big lights in our face, sitting behind a desk talking to Clyde Edwards-Helaire and CeeDee Lamb and Noah Fant and others, to writing a blurb today on the Packers hiring an assistant special teams coach.
You actually, we don't usually blurb that, by the way. You didn't actually have to post that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I was working hard, and it was quite the transition.
It's good that you're looking for stuff to post. But yeah, we've gone from having to literally stiff arm NFL players. Like, I'm sorry, Tom Brady. Like, I know you want to talk about your retirement, right, but you're not an active player anymore. Our audience doesn't care about that. You're not scoring any fantasy points for them in 2022. So yeah, I'm just back in my basement with my plant.
Right. I mean, we had to fend off Travis Kelce. You know, he's wanted to come on the show. He said, look, if you can get Mark Andrews, that'd be great. But we don't, we're not interested in you, Travis.
We had an amazing time in LA. We're glad to be back home and back on the fantasy grind. First inning, Super Bowl 56. It was a 3-point affair, featured 2 second half lead changes. It was a game that was in doubt to the final drive. I don't know if it was anyone's really idea of a classic Super Bowl. It was thankfully very close, intense. Kept you riveted throughout the game. But yeah, the second half, so many sacks. Like neither team could move the ball unless they just blatantly face masked Jalen Ramsey. Then they could score 75-yard touchdowns that way. That was kind of the best way to move the ball in the second half for the Bengals, just blatantly face mask Jalen Ramsey. But we're not gonna like do like a super in-depth recap of the game. It happened a couple days ago.
It did.
But I'm just wondering what you thought. Or what we thought the three most memorable moments of Super Bowl 56 are. Maybe kick us off. What do you think? You know, like, because like most of these games, like when people look back, they do get distilled down to like two or three moments.
Sure.
Basically, that's all you're going to remember from even like the biggest game. So what do you think one of the two or three moments people remember from Super Bowl LVI?
The phantom holding call on the goal line against a Bengals defender. I think it was a linebacker covering Cooper Kupp for some reason. That, you know, that jumps out because that would have forced the Rams to what they would have had to kick a field goal there, correct?
No, they were turning. What happened? No, they would have turned the ball over. It was 20-16. They did have all three timeouts, so the game wasn't over, but it was inside the 2-minute warning. It was fourth down. And yeah, they were down by 4 points. So maybe Sean McVay would have kicked the field. No, it was fourth down anyway. That was a joke.
Yeah, well, I mean, you just knew at that point. Okay, well, now a touchdown is virtually guaranteed, and I feel like Bengals fans are going to look back at that for many years.
It's weird because the Bengals, they got the benefit of it was truly a blatant face mask on
Dee
Higgins and Jalen Ramsey, so they got the benefit of a big call. But so the thing was, the refs were not calling anything. I think they called like maybe two or three penalties all night. That included, again, I don't know what was going on with this Rams offense. But I noticed a number of uncalled, like, Rams false starts.
Yes.
And the Rams were, like, false starting and, like, delay of gaming a lot in the postseason. It was not getting called. It was very strange. It was always the Rams, which leads me to believe maybe something their offensive line is doing, like, confuse the refs or something like that. But because I thought I noticed a number of, like, blatant false starts that were not called by the Rams.
We joke about not watching the games, but if you watch enough games, you can spot a false start the second it happens.
Yeah.
And I saw at least three where I was like automatically anticipating the play to be blown dead, and it wasn't. And I was very confused.
So yeah, that's the thing. The refs weren't calling any penalties whatsoever. They were not calling a tight game. And then that defensive hold, which, I mean, Chris Collinsworth couldn't pretend it was a penalty. Like, no one on Twitter could really pretend it was a penalty. Mm-hmm. It was just a very, very soft call. And, maybe a championship-altering call. Again, the Bengals were the beneficiary of a huge missed call. I mean, literally a 75-yard touchdown. But that should not have – and, again, it didn't totally decide the game. So the Rams still did have all three timeouts. The Bengals would have had to get a first down to end the game. No one wanted to see that call, basically. It was a classic. No one wanted to see that call. Yeah, it will be a memorable moment from this game. I think maybe the most memorable, the indelible moment, like the thing of like print magazines were still a big deal, is like they would have had like Aaron Donald's forearm on the cover of like 1994 Sports Illustrated, basically single-handedly stopping Samaje Perine running for the first time. I thought that was like the single most indelible image from the game of Aaron Donald just like force fielding Samaje Perine from that first down and basically, you will not pass, sir.
Yeah.
And like people too, like, so I was watching the game with my dad and my brother, and like, they know Aaron Donald's a really good player, but like, they were kind of talking about the game, like why, like, you know, they weren't like truthing Aaron Donald, but you know, they're just like, is like normal football fans. Like, they don't really know like why Aaron Donald is considered like so amazing, like what makes him so good. And then they saw that play, like, oh, that's why.
Yeah. There you go.
He's so strong that he basically just arm bars people back into oblivion. And I think that will probably be the single most remembered moment from the game.
How many times do you see that sort of play where a team is trying to kind of, you know, kind of cheat and get a first down on a game winning drive? And that's what that play was, really. I think Zach Taylor admitted it, trying to get one over on the Rams. And how many times do you see the running back get stopped, but then kind of fall forward? And it's kind of an afterthought. Okay, well, they get to keep going, you know, and that. So, yeah, that enormous play, you know, not a traditional highlight, but a big play.
Yeah. Then the fourth down call, Joe Burrow had been getting sacked essentially every play in the second half. So after Samaje Perine stopped, they called a traditional drop back on fourth down.
So
wasn't really sure about that.
Well, he was in shot. He was in shotgun.
Was he in shot? Either way, he was. It was not a quick pass. No, is what I meant.
It wasn't. And here's something. It reminded me of, you know, all the talk that we did last week about trends and deficiencies for both teams, particularly the Bengals, and the predictability of Zach Taylor's offense really played a huge factor on that last play, because we talked about it on the show last week. In the postseason, 80% of the Bengals' plays from shotgun have been passed. And Sean McVay said after the game, "I knew it was pass, and I knew Aaron Donald was going to make a play." And Aaron Donald, you may have noticed, did not even pretend like it could have been a rushing play, and therefore, you know, you get the sack.
What's that old phrase about, like, in competition, like, never do what the other team wants you to do, basically? And like Sean McVay, yeah, they have a clip. NFL Films is the clip, like, basically of Sean McVay saying, like, exactly what was going to happen on that play.
Because, and then it very happened. Predictable, yeah.
And then the Bengals lost the Super Bowl. Might have done something different there.
Yeah, Mixon was stopped on a few second half runs where they went heavy with two tight ends. And when the Bengals go heavy, they almost always run it. And the Rams were ready. I mean, they had 6-7 guys up front ready for those plays. So Zach Taylor might consider mixing it up a little next year.
It was not a particularly well called game.
No,
either team, was it?
No. It was our friend Davis Maddock on Twitter said it's the Coward Bowl. And
yeah, I mean, that's a bit strong, Davis.
Oh, I don't know if it's strong. You have two coaches who have coached like they're afraid to lose for almost the entire postseason, especially McVay. I mean, Taylor has been selectively aggressive, but McVay has been very conservative in this postseason, or was.
Yeah, McVay has always been conservative, but it did seem like he really, really ramped it up a notch. And it was almost like he was trying to have his cake and eat it too, because as everyone pointed out, you know, that no-look pass that Matthew Stafford made on what proved to be the game-winning drive, the kind of play, the kind of instant offense like Jared Goff could have just never created, could have never done on his own. It's like they got Matthew Stafford to make those aggressive big plays. Like a guy who basically didn't have to have the coach gain every yard for him. You know, not have everything be so designed. So they want those big explosive plays from Matthew Stafford. But then, yeah, they just like lived also in fear, like abject fear of Matthew Stafford making a mistake kind of the entire second half of the season. It's really that 1-2-3 game stretch where he threw like 5 or 6 picks. Yes. He seemed like forever scarred Sean McVay, and a guy who has always been conservative, yet was just hyper, hyper, hyper conservative. And what would have cost them the season,
yes,
if Tart on the 49ers could just catch an interception.
Exactly. And he didn't. Yes. He got away with a lot this postseason. I mean, you know, congrats to the Rams and everything. But wow, it's everything had to break just right. He was the antsy Brandon Staley, and I know people would point out Staley did not win the Super Bowl this year, McVay did. So there's really no argument against it.
I mean, Staley couldn't even beat the Raiders.
He could not. And it's unfortunate for the analytics community that happened.
I think you tweeted during the game, the Super Bowl. So the Bengals went for a really aggressive fourth down call on their own side of the field in the first half. Of course, yeah. Did not convert it. I think you made the point that it would be nice if the analytics ever worked.
Just once.
Just literally once, please.
One time. Can we get one fourth down conversion, please?
Because, yeah, every Patrick Daugherty father, every Danny Carter father, she's like, well, see? I mean,
yeah.
Like, the game's over now. I mean,
that's right. I was watching the game with my dad, some other family members, and I was upstairs getting something, and my dad's yelling up, the analytics didn't work.
Thankfully, I know that. I'm sure that actually happened. Thankfully, my dad, I believe, was out of the room and didn't witness that moment. Because otherwise, we probably would have for sure had that conversation.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, my dad was ragging on me for 15 minutes after that.
It wasn't. I was in true, like, I go back and forth, but I was like, I think almost literally. So this is embarrassing, by the way. I'm a bitter St. Louis Rams fan. I was rooting for the Cincinnati Bengals like they were my home team.
Really?
I'm ashamed to admit this, but I really was. And I was yelling at the TV, go for it. Go for it. And I might have said something like, come on, you coward. Like, go for it. And he went for it, and he didn't get it.
Yeah. I'm all for that call. I love fourth down aggressiveness in the NFL. I would just like one team to convert a fourth down at some point.
One time. It would be nice. I just pulled up the stats. There were 0.00 fourth down conversion percentage league wide. And
it's a lot of high profile 2-point conversions late in games. I'm thinking of the Ravens, a lot of high profile fourth down attempts. I'm thinking of the Chargers went awry this year, and I'm hoping for some bounce back in 2022.
Well, the Ravens went 8-9 after they started the year 8-3, and two of those six losses were games that ended on failed 2-point. And I believe if they had won one of those games, they would have made the playoffs.
Yeah, yeah, it hurts, but here's what we say when that happens. The process. We stick to the process.
The process. You trade Ben Simmons for James Harden. The process. always remember. So were those the only two memorable moments from the game? The penalty and the Donald thing?
There's another memorable image in my mind that's probably burned there forever, which is Jalen Ramsey tripping and falling against Ja'Marr Chase on that final play where Joe Burrow was sacked.
Oh, yeah.
And, oh, man, if we could have gotten one more second for Burrow in the pocket, he launches that thing. It doesn't even have to be a good throw.
No.
Ramsey's down. Chase scores, it's over. I mean, good Lord, that would have been amazing.
That was an indelible still image. But for an elite player, Jalen Ramsey falls a lot.
He really likes to fall. He does two things. He falls and he starts screaming at teammates while the ball's airborne.
Yeah, he's like a quarterback with the way that he instantly begins screaming at teammates when things go wrong. He's like
all in the air and he's screaming at somebody.
He's like Peyton Manning getting in his guard's fate. Like Peyton just like throws a horrible interception to a linebacker and he immediately just starts screaming at his guard. That's like what Jalen Ramsey does. Like, yeah, anytime he gets beat. He had a point, though, on the T. Higgins thing.
I think that he did have a very good point.
I don't know. Anything else happened in this game? It was a good game.
It was fine.
Question mark. I think it was a good game. Listen, did anyone do anything? The touchdown, the 75-yard touch. I mean, Cooper Kupp, many, many indelible images of Cooper Kupp never having a defender on him ever. Yeah, he's just so good.
He seems like I was thinking about this late in the game when, I was watching my showdown lineups fall to pieces because Cooper Kupp started to really produce there, that he's as inevitable as any player since since Calvin Johnson's heyday,
That's
like
crazy.
Where it's just like not stoppable. Like
I referred to him in our post game headline as unstoppable Kupp because he really is just unstoppable. No one, I mean, quite literally, no one stopped him all year.
Like when the Rams have to have it, it's only going one place, and everybody knows. Everyone in the stadium, on the sideline, on the field, everybody knows it, and it happens over and over and over again where he makes a play.
He's just open in the middle of the field. There's no one within 15 yards of him. He's like depleted somebody somehow with a juke. By the way, a crazy stat that I'm sure other people have seen. I'm sure other people had tweeted before I had, but you mentioned Calvin Johnson in the same sentence as Cooper Kupp.
I know.
The two most prolific wide receiver seasons in NFL history were Calvin Johnson, I believe, in 2012 and Cooper Kupp in 2021. And do you know who the quarterback for both of those seasons was, Denny?
Jared Goff.
Yes, exactly. So, yeah, Jared Goff played for both the Lions and Rams. Matthew Stafford has authored the two most prolific wide receiver seasons in NFL history, which maybe we should keep in mind with the Hall of Fame debate. I mean, I don't think he's a Hall of Famer yet. But
really?
Is everyone a Hall of Famer now?
I feel like protective of Stafford, and I'm not even a Stafford guy. But
I've always been a Stafford guy, but I feel like it's a little early.
Well, early? He's 34 years old or something.
He's old, yeah.
The fact that for years, for over a decade, people would say, well, he has the stats. He has the numbers. He's never going to get the Super Bowl. And until he does that, he's not a Hall of Famer. He gets the Super Bowl and they go, he has the stats. He has the Super Bowl. He needs two Super Bowls.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, you're right. He's probably my entire life. Yeah, I mean, I used to just draft Matthew Stafford like every year.
Oh, yeah.
Quarterback was Matthew Stafford. It just didn't matter.
I actually here my connection to Stafford is that he helped me win my home league in like the one of the first years I played fantasy, and I bought his Lions jersey afterward as a tribute because I was just so grateful. He was a late round selection. You remember this?
Yeah.
You could have gotten him in like the 12th or 13th round that year, and he just went ballistic.
If Stafford is so good, why did he lead the league in interceptions this year, didn't he? I mean,
it's curious. Yeah. It is curious.
By the way, 17 interceptions leading the league is like crazy. That's like how efficient the league has become.
Yeah.
That someone's leading with 17. It's not
how did Trevor Lawrence not have
18? That is a very good question, actually.
Every time I turned on a Jaguar, well, I didn't ever turn on a Jaguars game, but every time I saw on Red Zone, he was throwing an almost pick. So
Urban Meyer should not have been fired. That guy didn't lead the league in picks.
This is what the media won't say.
Do you think this was the start of a run for the Bengals? Because they have a superstar second-year quarterback in Joe Burrow. Or do you just feel like this was still more of a one-off for like a good roster, but still like not anyone's idea of an elite roster? Or do you think – so like it has been like a lot of times like when a team like makes a surprise run like this, it ends up being – like the year the Packers won the Super Bowl in like 2010, I think they were 10-6. Then they went 15-1 the next year. And then the second year time the Giants won the Super Bowl, it kind of came out of nowhere. And then they went like 12-4 next year. So a lot of times, like this year's surprise team was like, obviously, like next year is like big time. Like they were good all along. Like the records maybe didn't totally reflect it until they got to the playoffs there. But or do you think the Bengals are one of those teams? Or do you think this is still this kind of a team that got lucky? Not lucky, such a loaded word, but you know what I mean? Do you think they just got hot? Or do you think this is like the beginning of a legit run for the Bengals?
I'm going to take the coward's way out of this question and say that they did get lucky to get to the Super Bowl, and
they did.
It's the and it could and it, I th- believe it's the start of a good run, maybe a great run, because of the cornerstones they have on offense. Because of, I mean, T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase. Really, it's hard to emphasize how good a duo that is. You know, I mean, is there a better duo of wide receivers now? I don't think so. In the NFL, you obviously Burrow. Listen, they have the fifth most salary cap space.
I was gonna say they are just loaded with cap. Even after they spent so much money last year, they're still like
right.
Awash in cap space.
They can build the offensive line through the draft. They have several unrestricted and restricted free agents on the offensive line starters. So I would look for a total remake of that offensive line. So you're getting rid of the weak point of the offense this offseason. You're building it through the draft. You're building it through free agency with all that cap space. So I think it could be if they do it right and if they build at least a decent offensive line. Burrow, Chase, and Higgins make this team good for a long time.
Yeah, I think it does feel like a run starter to me too, because they have an elite young quarterback on a rookie contract. They have all the weapons, like you said. The defense, yeah, they don't have like a bunch of elite players, but like Lou Anarumo has proven to be one of the better defensive coordinators in the NFL this year. And the comparison I keep making is kind of back to those old like Greg Williams Saints teams, where they're like it's so hard to like plan on game changing plays on defense, but they play a kind of like a swarming aggressive style that creates big player aggressive. Not even right. They're so unpredictable on defense. But they're not like hyper aggressive the way those Greg Williams teams were, but they create big plays because they're just so unpredictable. They just throw it seemed like every playoff game in the second half, like the Bengals basically got the other team's like play sheet because like teams just like stopped moving the ball. Like it was totally insane. They were making like huge mistakes. I mean, every game, the wild card round ended with an interception of Derek Carr. The divisional game ended with an interception of Ryan Tannehill and a walk-off field goal. The AFC Championship game ended with an interception of Patrick Mahomes and a walk-off field goal. And maybe there's some luck in there, especially the Tannehill game. There were some tipped balls, but they play like just a really unpredictable kind of – so in terms of it's so unpredictable, aggressive style of defense. And so I think they have a good philosophy on defense. They were like had a lot of hired guns on defense from free agency this year, but as we pointed out, they have the money to do that again. And they probably won't be making like long-term commitments to people. So they don't have to like tie themselves up like as they get ready to extend Joe Burrow in a year or two. But yeah. And so like they have the one glaring weakness in the off. They don't have a bunch of glaring weaknesses. They have the one glaring weakness in the offensive line, which they can orient kind of their entire off season around. And it does kind of feel like the Cowards way out there was the, like, it was a lot. They got some pretty good luck during this playoff run, but it's definitely a good team that's on the rise. And, you know, well, shockingly, when you're a good team, a lot of times you get lucky, quote unquote, because you make your own luck because you're good.
And also there's the factor, you know, while you were talking, I was thinking, you know, Cincinnati could become something of a, you know, of a destination spot for free agents who are looking, looking to win. You know,
yeah, I'm from St. Louis. I understand what it's like to be from a mid-range Midwest American town, but it's not get crazy.
I mean, I would never go to Ohio myself, but I think that other, I think the players would.
I live in Missouri, so I have solidarity with you Ohioans. Please don't get mad at me. I mean, we're fine states. Everyone think people don't understand. We're fine states.
We're fine
people states. Don't understand. People don't understand. We're totally fine states. Sticking with the Bengals, Joe Burrow was the QB8 by average fantasy points in 2021. Josh Allen, Tom Brady, Justin Herbert, Patrick Mahomes, Kyler Murray, Lamar Jackson, and Dak finished ahead of him. Do you think Joe Burrow is a top five fantasy quarterback for 2022, or is this too conservative, too balanced of an offense, or is he just going to be cut totally loose with these weapons that he has and become a truly elite fantasy quarterback in 2022?
When he was cut loose, finally, starting around week 12, he was a top five quarterback and almost top three, really, you know, through from week 12 to week 18, Joe Burrow had the fifth most points, fantasy points among quarterbacks. He was 1 point behind Tom Brady and 2 points behind Dak Prescott. The only quarterback who outscored him by a significant margin over that stretch was Josh Allen. And that's not a shock to, you know, considering Allen's production. So, yeah, I mean, I think we can pencil Burrow in. And honestly, just the high profile nature of a Super Bowl run will make him very desirable in fantasy leagues, maybe especially, you know, casual leagues where people say, oh yeah, that's the kid who brought the Bengals to the Super Bowl. I'm taking him. So he's not going to be a value, I don't think, in fantasy, but yes, I think top five is easily in his range of outcomes.
Yeah. He'll definitely be drafted as a top five quarterback. That's a really good point. Cause like you said, understandably, people are going to be drawn to that. And like you alluded to, after they did cut him loose, so the final 5 weeks of the season, which was only four games for Joe Burrow because he sat in week 18, but the final 5 weeks of the season, he was the number one overall QB by average points. He averaged over 30 points his final four starts of the season, 11 touchdowns with zero interceptions, so maybe some luck there. But, I mean, when they cut him, I mean, there were some outlier performances in there, like a 525-yard like spike game against the Ravens, right. But yeah, he, like you said, when they finally opened up that offense in December, and he did prove capable of those monster fantasy days.
I may have forgotten that he sat in week 18, so I have adjusted I have adjusted those ranks, and I see now that Burrow actually from week 12 to week 17 was the QB2.
Yeah, you were doing total points. I mean, it's fine because, but yeah, average points, he was the QB1 over the final 5 weeks of the regular season.
NBC Sports Edge's own Pat Corain pointed out that the Cincinnati pass rate over expected really spiked during that time. And so, like you said, he was cut loose and we saw the results. A good quarterback with those kind of weapons, you know, it's tremendous. Now I don't think that QB1 overall is in his range of outcomes because he doesn't have the rushing that Josh Allen has. But, you know, you wouldn't complain with the top five season.
No, I think basically he's on like that Aaron Rodgers, like top five fantasy type of trajectory where even though he doesn't really run, he led the league in completion percentage and yards per attempt this year, which is the kind of thing Aaron Rodgers does where he's basically just so efficient and good, makes so many big plays that it doesn't really matter if the volume isn't insane or if the rush attempts aren't there because he's just so good. Even if he's attempting 32, 33 passes a game and only rushing once or twice a game, he's just that good of a passer. He can be the guy who's just so good as a traditional passer that he gets into the top five. And I do definitely think he'll be drafted as a top five. And I mean, it's such stiff competition. It is. I think top five is very, very reasonable expectation for Joe Burrow.
It is. I think mostly you're looking for him to like maybe fall in drafts and get a get a deal on him. I will say one thing that jumps out is his touchdown rate from the season, 6.5%.
Very high.
Very, it is.
Usually it comes down.
It's high. compared to his rookie season, he had a 3.2% touchdown rate. Now that's very low. Obviously we wouldn't expect, you know, a drop to that level, but it is, you know, it could be a concern next year for keeping up with that 6.5% touchdown rate.
Denny, on the Rams side of the ball, are we spooked by what we saw from Cam Akers, or are we encouraged the guy with that serious an injury was back in fewer than 6 months and operating his team's lead back? Because during the playoffs, he had 67 carries for 173 yards, averaged 2.58 yards per carry. He was a guy who's known for his home runs. And if you give a player like Cam Akers 67 carries, I mean, usually at least one of them is going for 40 or 50. He had a long run of 15. So should we be discouraged by that, or should we be encouraged that he came back and held up on these kind of workloads? Now he's a full off season to maybe get his explosion back.
I think I'm going to thread the needle once again here. I think that you can be and should be encouraged by the team's commitment to him as a lead back. I think that his performance is undeniably concerning. EPA wise, he was off the charts bad. Like it was like a wasted down every single time Cam Akers touched the ball outside of that Cardinals game, honestly. And you know, I'm not a film guy, you may know, but I will say that Cam Akers,
even a TV guy, by the way. I mean, you didn't even watch the Super Bowl, so
I wouldn't know Cam Akers if he walked into my office right now. and I would just say, "Oh God, who are you?" So Cam Akers, he looked explosive. He looked back for that Cardinals game in the wild card round. Not so much after that, honestly. And I don't know if he just physically wasn't ready. We talked to CEH at the Super Bowl. CEH said, "Oh, he's back. Like it's back." But I have my doubts.
I think I'll take the glass half full look. And this is not the kind of thing I'm going to really be able to back up with, you know, stats, quote unquote, or numbers, quote unquote, or even the eye test, quote unquote, since they were all bad. But the way I'm just going to look at it is he got the best of both worlds with his injury, where he came back just freakishly fast, clearly was not back to his pre-injury form, but now he probably at the very least had to regain the confidence in his leg. I mean, he handled 67 carries in what could be the four biggest games of his life. He knows now he has trust back, and which they always say is like the biggest thing. If you're coming back from a knee injury or an Achilles injury, like Cam Akers, that the final thing to come is usually like the trust in that body part. He now knows he's taking the highest level reps he can. Now he has 6 or 7 months where he can just focus solely on training, getting back, clawing back whatever the final percentage points he is from 100% health. I'm still going to view it as a positive thing, even though like by any metric or just watching the game, you could see the explosion was not – the power was there, but the explosion was not there. But now we can reasonably assume that he has trust again in his leg. And now hopefully the rest comes back over this offseason. So hopefully, even though it was ineffective, it does serve that purpose.
Something Jamal Charles said to the press after he came back from his first ACL tear was that he didn't trust his repaired knee until like the third game of the season when he broke off a long touchdown run against the Saints to end the game in overtime. He said that was the first time that he truly trusted his knee through training camp, through the preseason, through the early part of the regular season. So yeah, so sometimes these guys do need, you know, that kind of confirmation, and they have to have that confidence grow before they can really cut it loose.
So hopefully that's what's happening with Cam Akers. Another thing, there's basically no positive way to spin it, is Odell Beckham re-tearing his left ACL. Just a devastating development. So about getting trust back, like a player who seemed like he was realizing he was almost back to his pre-injury form during the playoffs, just dominated in the NFC Championship game, appeared well on his way in the Super Bowl, was just running free, looking amazing. Yeah, non-contact. It's another left ACL tear. He's going on 30. He's going to be a free agent. I mean, this is pretty bleak at this point. Where Odell, it seemed like he'd played his way back into probably a multi-year deal, like guaranteed money for multiple seasons. Do you think now is he going to be like 1 year prove it offer territory basically at this point?
It would be borderline shocking if it were more than 1 year, and if it were not incentive laden. You know, he wants to go to a good team. Obviously, he's not, you know, the youngest receiver anymore, coming off this injury, second in 2 years. So Yeah, I mean, I think you're looking at a one-year prove-it deal for a good team where he can, you know, maybe serve as the wide receiver too, or maybe the third option in the past. I'm thinking of Kansas City mostly. but yeah, it's wow, what a terrible break for him. You felt horrible for him.
The Chiefs have such an immediate need at receiver that I almost feel like it won't be someone like the Chiefs need like a number two receiver now. Or if you sign Odell Beckham, he might be ready for week one. The ACL timelines have sped up. Somebody, you know, it's a second torn ACL. Like you said, he's going to be 30. He's going to get approved. He's going to get a deal from a good team. It seems clear. Like, he's not going to just sign with whoever offers him the most money.
No.
It'll probably be a good team that just offers him the most money anyway at this point, because like, why would a bad team, like, it's going to be like a kind of like a luxury addition that a good team will make. But yeah, it's just what a sad, because he was almost looking like he was never going to be all the way back, but he was as close to back basically as he was going to get.
Yeah,
at his age with his injury history.
Rams beat writers really don't expect him back in LA next year. I know that's what we're hinting at here. You know, just off the top of my head, one team that could afford to sign him to a contract heavy with incentives and a short-term thing and kind of wait on him to get right, the Bengals.
Yeah, they won't. They're not going to devote it. Even if it's minimal resources, I feel like they won't, because they can't cut Tyler Boyd yet. That's a bad take, Denny.
All right.
You're fired.
What can you do?
That actually, I mean, it would be awesome. It would be amazing. It's true too. That would be like a true luxury.
It would be.
Maybe a team. Yeah. I was worried that you were going to say the Patriots.
No.
I mean, they need immediate help like the Chiefs too, but they could be drawn to each other.
That's not a good receiver situation though.
No, it's not at all. But people like to play for, some people like to play for Bill Belichick. Not everyone likes to play for Bill Belichick. I guess they could. The Packers, though, are kind of like the Chiefs, where they need instant help. They kind of can't just like wait on someone to get healthy, but they could revisit the Packers situation. Maybe it will be the Packers or Chiefs.
I don't know. Maybe. Yeah. Packers. Yeah. Packers would make a lot of sense. Well, he almost went to the Packers, right?
He did. He did. Yeah. So I will say this maybe increases the chances he resigns with the Rams, which is what a fallback take anytime someone gets hurt.
Yeah.
But like now, why would he, maybe if he's going to get like a crappy deal anyway, why not just stay with the team that he's known, like rehab in the place he got comfortable in this season. So it probably does actually increase the chance he resigns with the Rams.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Final Rams. I mean, are any of these Rams actually going to retire? I mean, Andrew Whitworth is probably retiring. Eric Weddle has retired. Andrew Whitworth seems to be retired. Do you think Aaron Donald or Sean McVay is actually going to retire, Denny?
I don't. I think they will be back. I know Sean McVay said, we'll see, when talking about coming back for 2022. I think, you know, they're burned out. These guys are burned out after such the stress and pressure of a postseason run like they had, especially with some of the nail biters that they played through. I think Aaron Donald, I told you this today, I think Aaron Donald just wants to eat a cheeseburger without feeling bad about himself. You know, that's okay. He should be able to have a few cheeseburgers and maybe take some time off from the gym, as you know, he's one of, if not the most dedicated guy in the NFL. So that's probably it. You know, I think a few weeks or months away from the grind will refresh these guys.
Yeah, Aaron Donald should literally have his cake and eat it too. Not retire, but have some cake. Like have some
beer.
Cake. Yeah, I mean, also, we were joking, Sean McVay, too, just desperately wants a beer. He hasn't had a beer in God knows how long.
Right.
Even if it's like 4.4% alcohol, he just wants a beer. He just wants a single beer. He might not even finish it. It won't be a pint. It'll be 12 ounces. He might not finish it, but he just wants a beer.
Give Sean McVay 1.5 White Claws, and he will be ready to come back.
Yeah, he will be fired up. And yeah, by the way, you alluded to, it's like, this is like a half decade. So Sean McVay is still the youngest coach in the league, but this has been like a half decade pressure cooker for them. You know, they've been contending now for Super Bowls for 5 years. And it just does seem like it seems so silly because we're talking about athletes and coaches, but it really does just come at such a heavy cost. And, you know, they came so close to not winning it this year so many different times too. So like, it was not easy by any stretch. And I just think they're so burned out, but it's very, very hard. I mean, Aaron Donald is the classic. He has nothing left to prove. But he's also 30.
Right.
So maybe just prove that you can continue to play football, Aaron Donald.
It seems premature to me. I really think that we just need to let Aaron Donald relax for a bit, and he'll say, "Oh yeah, I'm fine. I'm coming back.
Have a burger." ESPN's Chris Mortensen has reported that Carson Wentz will probably, quote unquote, be traded or released. I mean, it's February 15th. We're getting into this already, like truly, truly sick topics, Denny. The sick topic being where might Carson Wentz play in 2022, if not the Indianapolis Colts?
Yeah. So the Colts are going to have to eat at least some of Wentz's contract for 2022. The Indianapolis Star speculated that the team could eat as much as $15 million to offload him. Man. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's serious. Just to get him out. And this is a Brock, Brock Osweiler situation.
It is.
So I, you know, Houston strikes me as a potential, wait.
I mean, it makes sense. I mean, that's the thing. It actually does make sense. I just like, don't even want to think about it.
They don't really have a quarterback. I mean, Davis Mills is fine, but come on. Davis Mills is more likely a career backup than he is a legit starter.
Maybe he also had several legitimately good starts as a rookie.
He did. So I'm not. Yeah. No one can take that away from him.
No, truly. I mean, you're trying.
I'm trying to forget.
Yeah.
Also, if someone hears this and says, "Oh, the Colts would never trade him to a division rival," you know. Let's relax.
If you're trying to get rid of Carson Wentz, you'll do whatever.
Yes, exactly. It doesn't matter that you're going to play the Texans twice. And also, if you think Wentz is that bad that you're willing to eat $15 million, then you're not too afraid of playing them twice.
You think net positive that you're playing.
You might be looking forward to it. So I think Wentz fits the culture of the Houston organization, and that would go well.
He does, Denny. We'll leave it that he does. I was looking at the Denver Broncos would normally be falling over themselves to add Carson Wentz, but it seems like maybe they're finally trying to find religion. Like, well, maybe we should get a quarterback who just isn't like really huge and like supposedly has a big arm, because Carson Wentz doesn't even have a big arm anymore. And Wentz, by the way, he had 17 touchdowns and 3 interceptions over the first 8 games. Then weeks 10 to 18, his yards per attempt fell from 8 to 6.3. He had only 10 touchdowns and 8 starts. He cleared 185 yards only twice in his final 8 games. I mean, I think he got hurt, which, I mean, is always kind of like the situation, but like, I think his arm just like died because it was bad. It was almost like Cam Newton. It wasn't like Cam Newton level in terms of like the eye test, but like something happened to his arm where his arm just like straight up died.
Yeah, I'm not sure anything compares to Cam Newton at this point and his arm strength drop off. But yeah, if you look at his late season games, I mean, like his adjusted yards per attempt in the final 2 games, 6.2 and 5.5 against the Jaguars. Man,
so maybe like there will be a team who will trade for him if they just convince themselves that he was hurt. But he wasn't even great before that. I mean, the stats were fine. But he was someone that they were scheming around and not like scheming for to win games.
Yeah, these teams will do anything to get a quarterback. And we saw this, you know, that the Colts acquiring Wentz. It's just they're just praying that it works out, and it didn't. Did not.
Yeah, now they're down bad.
They are down bad.
They're down real, real bad. trying to trade Carson Wentz 1 year after game. Like, we swear. I mean, I know we're trying to trade him to you, but he's still good.
He still plays.
He's still active NFL player. Yes, we will be right back.
With Spring Black Friday deals at the Home Depot, you can give your lawn or garden beds a pop of color and protection. Right now, get a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10. Help your soil retain moisture longer with color that lasts up to 12 months. Shop Spring Black Friday deals for a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Color selection varies by store. Limit 60 bags per customer while supplies last.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
NBC Sports Edge Plus is giving you an NBA mid-season offer. Get 20% off an Edge Plus annual subscription throughout February when you use the promo code STEW20. Finish your regular season strong at one low price. Go to NBCSportsEdge.com/EdgePlus and use promo code STEW20 at checkout to save today. Denny, our show is actually almost over, but I have an article.
You do?
I wrote words. Even though we podcasted for approximately 17 hours last week, we still actually do write words. You wrote a great Super Bowl preview, by the way. I mean, check that out. You know, if you haven't watched the game yet, like if you DVR'd the game, check out Denny's Super Bowl preview. Get you ready for Super Bowl 56. But I wrote a seasons in review article. I try to do this at the end of every season. Basically, just do a paragraph write up on each team. Mm-hmm. I was told that maybe you have some thoughts on my article.
I had some thoughts. I had serious thoughts on two teams, and then slightly less serious thoughts on another two teams. I'll start here with the Falcons. And by the way, you did a very good job, and I thought you had a lot of really good lines that summarized these team seasons. It's almost like you are immersed in the NFL all year.
Very immersed.
Yeah, here's what you pointed out about the Atlanta Falcons this year, who were somehow, some way, in contention for the playoffs as late as week 17. They were 7-8 at one point with a -122 point differential.
Yes.
But they were alive nonetheless, you pointed out. They lost to the Bills and Saints and limped into the offseason with a still misleading 7-10 record. It's still misleading because the Falcons had a -146 point differential. It was the second worst in the NFC and the fifth worst in the entire league. The Falcons are low key one of the worst teams in the league. I thought that during the season, but this helped confirm it for me. And they have no hope.
No.
Going forward, they have
nothing. What I also say in the article is that there wasn't really any positives to point to in the season. And you left out, I mean, we say a lot of point differential stats here, but maybe the single most insane point differential stat for them was they played seven teams that made the playoffs.
Yeah.
They went 0-7 with a -159 point differential against playoff team.
That, some would say that I should have led with that. And it's
just unbelievably bad.
Yeah, but I mean, it just shows that when they played a halfway legit team, they were wiped out completely.
They got shut out on Thursday Night Football by the Patriots.
They couldn't hold a candle to teams, not world beaters, not dominant teams, just fine teams, just okay teams. I really think that it's one of the most deceiving seasons in recent memory.
And they're unlucky that they won seven games because they needed a better draft pick.
Yes.
So they need to remake both lines. Even though they have Kyle Pitts, they have so little skill talent. If Calvin Ridley is going to force a trade, they don't have a quarterback anymore. They don't have a backfield even. Just amazingly deep issues on both sides of the ball. And they're going to be contending for the number one overall pick in 2022.
They are so stuck with Matt Ryan. They're just stuck. And there's nothing they can do. There's still this sentiment among, Falcons Twitter and our co-host Matt Straub that Ryan still has something left. There's nothing there. There's nothing there. They need to replace him as soon as possible. But the thing is, financially, they can't.
Yeah, it's $40 million in dead money if he were cut with only $8 million in saving. I mean, maybe they will just do it. It doesn't improve to $24 million in dead money if they make him a post-June 1st cut. But, they are It seems like they're stuck with him for one more
year. It'll be the most painful Band-Aid to rip off in history.
And it's not good for anyone. It's not good for them. It's definitely not good for Matt Ryan, who could still maybe be serviceable behind like an actually good offensive line.
Maybe.
But
yeah.
Who else do you want to talk about, Denny?
We're going to move over to the Vikings. This is the complete opposite situation. The Vikings, you mentioned, you aren't always what your record says you are. The Vikings were definitely 8-9 with a minus one point differential. And this checks out. It did
check out. That was one I'm like, well, not surprised.
It makes no sense that that team was not in serious playoff contention with the players they have. You know, it's just tremendously bad fortune, maybe, but also the hyper-conservative nature of the Mike Zimmer regime really fed into that, I think. And you know, when they needed to be aggressive, they were not. And I think it came down to that. But a good team. I think that's the, you know, looking forward, the Vikings are a solid team. It's just a matter of, you know, managing the team a little bit better.
Yeah, I mean, they were above average team that was just comfortable letting the game come down to the final possession every game, which means it's a coin flip. And just, yeah, even it's a slightly more, they wouldn't have had to go full Brandon Staley or anything, just even slightly more aggressive game management. Right. They almost certainly would have made the playoffs. Like, it kind of embarrassing that they went 8-9. And so, but that style, yeah, I was just not surprised to find that they were basically as 500 as you could possibly be in a 17 game NFL, because they played for coin flips and then they lost a lot of them.
Right. That's a great way to put it. And so all this turnover, even the shocking dismissal of Spielman as the general manager there, which, you know, I don't think anybody anticipated seriously. But that seems like a franchise and a team in turmoil. I think that that's a little bit deceiving. You know, I think that they have the pieces there. And, you know, Cousins should be a good fit with the incoming head coach O'Connell and the system he wants to install. Cousins is still a coach killer, so we'll see. but I do think things are fine for the Vikings. They're fine.
Yeah, I think he'd be a good fit for this Rams. I think he's like the happy medium between Matthew Stafford and Jared Goff, mm-hmm. where he's not as aggressive as Matthew Stafford. But he's still, unlike Jared Goff, will actually like make plays that like aren't designed occasionally. Right. He's not to the level of Matthew Stafford, but he is kind of like the midway point between those two, I feel like, and could have success in this Rams-type system.
So I want to do your Giants take justice by reading what you wrote here.
Oh,
and
boy.
It'll take a minute. But I do love some Joe Judge commentary, and you delivered. Judge's first year in New York was considered a modest success largely for what did not happen. He didn't fight the team mascot, for instance. He had that going for him. Year two revealed the depth of the absence. No plan, no hope, and ultimately no fight. Judge would bitterly protest that final charge, but NFL coaches who actually want to win games do not call quarterback sneaks on second down to improve their punting position. That is absolutely the case. You could have Johnny Knoxville under center, and that wouldn't be the plan. It is something any serious leader... I'm sorry, it is not something any serious leader would do, and despite his deadly serious manner, Judge was never serious. I think you nailed it there.
Yeah, I went on poor Joe, and I'm sorry, Joe, but I was too nice last year, despite what the fans thought.
And they agree with you now. They agree with you.
They do.
But that part about being unserious, like that hit home, like that struck a chord with me, because any coach who coaches the way that he did, all the punts, you know, on fourth and one near midfield, all of the hyper conservative play calling anytime they had a lead or were in the game late, that quarterback sneak debacle late in the season, all of that showed a coach who, you know, really in the end wasn't committed to doing what it took to win.
Yeah. That's really what when I sat down to write the article, that really is what I thought, that like he was not a serious football coach. And he thought that he very much was. By the way, if you actually read the article, it links to the classic clip of Jared Allen sacking Johnny Knoxville. So,
I didn't click it. That is funny though. Yeah. But he, you know, I will say that, Joe Judge, play acted a serious coach very well.
He did. He did.
Finally,
him on that.
Yeah. Finally, we have your Detroit Lions breakdown. Yeah. I'll read that, 'cause I just have to do it justice. The fact that keyed up new coach Dan Campbell never got himself hospitalized with caffeine poisoning or accidentally drove a motorcycle over Jared Goff was enough in some people's eyes to make the Lions season a success. The lowest bar was cleared. And, you know, you I think you mentioned this on a late season podcast where it made me kind of reel in my Dan Campbell fanboy nature here. Although I do really like the way
we still like the guy.
I do. But, you know, but you're right. I mean, the bar was like, if he can win a game, it's kind of a decent season.
You know, it's the same thing with the Texans, which is something Rivers McCown reeled me in. Like, I'm like, Rivers, you don't understand. Like, David Culley and the Texans won a few games. Like, they were going to go 0-17. And he was always like, yeah, well, they are still hellaciously bad at every part of football.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, when you put it that way.
driving a motorcycle over Jared Goff.
Don't make me laugh at my own jokes. I will laugh at my own jokes. I'm not above it at all.
That's the only way I'll write something is if I'm laughing at
it. That's true.
If it doesn't make me laugh, I'm not going to put it down.
If you want to know the line I wrote that I kept laughing at, I'm so sorry if people are seeing me laugh at my own jokes, but I wrote, the Seahawks went down to the crossroads. They drove over the median. That's kind of how I viewed the Seahawks season. At a turning point, and instead of like taking one path or the other, they just drove over the damn median.
No, you can't figure
anything out.
It's the end of the Pete Carroll era for the fifth time.
It is. Yeah, I know. Yeah, shockingly, it did not end. But this show.
Still not over?
It's not over. It's not over. But Denny, this show is over.
Yes.
Isn't that shocking? The show's over now. Thank you so much for listening. Again, thank you so much to listening to us last week. Danny, we would be lying. We really did have like the time of our lives
in
Los Angeles making podcast content. So much fun. We hope you had fun listening last week. We hope you enjoyed this show today. We'll be coming at you every Tuesday this off season. We're going to have we're going to have a show with Karain, some dynasty talk this off season. We're going to have NFL draft content. We're going to have a lot of awesome stuff on the podcast. So, thank you so much for listening today. Thank you for listening going forward. For Denny, I am Patrick, and we will talk to you later.
With Spring Black Friday deals at the Home Depot, you can give your lawn or garden beds a pop of color and protection. Right now, get a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10. Help your soil retain moisture longer with color that lasts up to 12 months. Shop Spring Black Friday deals for a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Color selection varies by store. Limit 60 bags per customer while supplies last.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.